Awesome.
If you knew that all you had to do was to master the art of how to create relationships, which at the core is the only crucial skill needed to educate students, would you believe me? It matters not what your content knowledge is. It matters very little about your ability to be creative, organized, collaborative, or even savvy with technology. If at all, really. All you need to know is how to create and foster relationships. Folks, today on the 10th episode of Season 4, we're going to tackle an issue in education that is dividing staff. It's clearly the most commonly heard complaint today by educators in all grades, and I'm going to do it by telling a story. My name is Joe Clossy, and I'm your host of the Traveling Principal podcast, a show intended to give you the same feeling you get when realizing your scratch-off lotto ticket just paid for your groceries. Yahtzee!
Hooray!
Okay, so we digress because this is a tough one. So let's just get right into it, shall we? I speak with educators all over the world, weekly as well. I love it. I think it grounds me as well as keeps me current on all things happening in schools. I need to do this. It's almost a requirement for me. As well, a lot of these educators are my friends, so it makes sense that I chat with them all the time. That said, I find that most of what we talk about revolves around or points back to this ongoing complaint that educators have today about how bad kids are. Not how bad. How about some other words, like how crazy they are, how behind they are, how wild and inconsiderate they are, and how they've never seen anything like this, that they aren't even sure if they're going to be able to handle this job for another 12, 8, 6 years until they retire. If you have heard this as well, or you are one of the ones who feels this way and says it a lot, then you know what I mean. If you aren't one of these people in schools today, what they're referring to is the mayhem that is witnessed in schools today. That's so uncommon, at times very unsafe, and I will also add, happens in front of many other students, involves staff injuries, and in most cases goes months, if not years, until it's resolved, if at ever. By resolved, I mean the student conforms to the standards of whatever regular, quote-unquote, behavior is anymore. This means the kid stops throwing desks or stabbing people when upset. Now, this is the common complaint that I hear. I'm also giving you the experiences that I see. It means throwing desks. It means, you know, kids stop stabbing people when they're upset. This means a student is able to express their words when frustrated instead of smashing a laptop cart filled with MacBooks. This could mean a student shows up every day and on time to classes without walking out. Who knows? But by resolved, it collectively means that the student is no longer exhibiting behaviors that equate to comparable history of events. Am I making sense there? So, what we're trying to say is there's this common complaint about the kids that I'm hearing from teachers, and it's so bad and it's so new. We don't think we're going to see resolve. But what could resolve look like? Is it a position we have yet to describe and hire for? Is it a strategy? Is it a piece of technology, maybe? Now, I know that commonly accompanying this complaint about kids is that administrators don't do anything about it either. We can't suspend anymore because that hasn't been effective in years. We have little to no parent involvement in a lot of cases, or ineffective parents as well, which is real and repairable or fixable 100% if the parent is willing. So if a kid is tossed from class, they are often sent right back as well. Now, that last part about sending them out and having them come back, I'll get to, because this is another example of the importance of a relationship. So, without further ado, here's my story that kind of encompasses this complaint and presents a path towards possible resolve. In 2009, a student walks into my school that I was the AP of and was and still is today, y'all, the toughest kid I've ever seen. She would fight at the drop of a hat. She would curse out teachers and staff daily, but she was also smart and scored well on math tests and English essays when she had to. She did little work outside of school, but that's because where she lived did not foster an environment conducive to concentrating. In fact, it was quite different. By the time she was a second semester freshman, I suspended her 5 times that fall. The last one was for fighting someone, and when I asked her why she fought that girl, she couldn't say. Not because she didn't want to, but she couldn't say why. She had no reason. My superpower as an administrator is my ability to observe. What I saw at that point while evaluating how to get a better grip on helping this kid was that she lacked a loving, steady home life with supportive folks, had teachers and staff at her school where she spent most of her day that treated her negatively and without respect whatsoever, but did she earn it and deserve it otherwise in their eyes? No. I mean, we're calling spades a spade here in this podcast. I saw school safety who were tired of her and were losing hope that she would mature and let up. Right? We were just talking about that. I saw her peers not wanting to be around her, and therefore she was finding new friends that would. These friends were different. These friends had the tendency to be like her in school. So when she was called down to the office for this 6th altercation to start the new spring semester in 2010, I tried something new. I said hello when she walked in, and she looked up immediately. She was so taken off guard, and I did not show that I was upset. I didn't get angry and raise my voice, and I actually asked her if she was okay. She responded and said that she was and thanked me for asking, and from that very moment, I knew I had broken the unbreakable. You see, the relationships that kid did have were predominantly negative, mainly confrontational, mainly included the streets, included false hopes, and was certainly filled with language and arguments that we do not teach nor replicate in schools. So why would we expect this person to act, therefore, any different, though? But if I did and did not treat her like everyone else, because I gave her respect, attention, and proper time to listen and communicate with, what I did was rewire the skill that defines what and how communication exists in that person's life. I created the makings of a sincere relationship. The following week, the kid had no fights. But the week after she did. And again, I met her with a calmness that was shocking to her. By this time, I followed up with visiting her and stopping in to see her teachers. I was proactive in my measures of identifying what her needs were and how to meet them. This was a collective combination of my efforts and knowledge, her feedback, teacher feedback, school safety feedback. But when everyone was saying to suspend her, I knew what she was going home to. I knew it was the school's responsibility to give her a better place and allow her to prosper and create one for herself. I even went with her on parent-teacher nights way more than once, so yes, nights with an S, because we knew no one would come. And I knew my relationship with her meant enough that our plan of action to fix her grades would be sincere. We made timelines those evenings that were realistic. We looked at how we could support her. And because the teachers saw that what I was doing was not giving up, which was after the "he's not going to do anything with her" remarks and the "he isn't suspending, so don't expect much of a change" comments and the "because he's not suspending, it's creating the behavior" side speech that I would hear regularly, and they would make my blood boil, don't get me wrong, and not because I didn't agree, but because I thought they thought it ended there. And I knew it couldn't, and it drove me nuts. When I thought that they thought it ended there, I couldn't stomach it. That time-stamped their efforts for me. I agreed that there should be like a time when I should suspend kids. I agreed that she should have been suspended. But suspension is for the kids who know the difference between right and wrong and have a healthy fear, maybe of their family, so they have no choice but to correct that behavior. Suspending a kid who lives in the projects and goes back home to mayhem in her hood that we hear about in popular rap lyrics of some of the best New York City still has to offer. This is not sending the proper message. This is just giving them more time there. Suspension is not a one-size-fits-all disciplinary measure. It is not the answer. I was suspended before. It did not help. I only learned how not to get caught. Now, what happened after going to a fall parent-teacher night and meeting all her teachers and writing down their suggestions, which I primed them prior and asked for their unwavering support and ultimately erasing their past emotions about this kid, and with an unbiased lens, they give their administrator what they think is her chance of passing successfully. And I wrote it all down. I had an awesome crop of hardworking teachers that, just like in the situations you may be comparing this to, did not have to justify ever changing the path of the behavior and the efforts that they've already put forth for these kids. And yet they knew nothing else worked. So I wrote it all down. They all bought in. We sat there with dates. Her and I went back to the office after, and with each class, we made a plan. I checked her each lunchtime period and at every end of the day. She had her head down come second semester sophomore year and was working. By junior year in the fall, she was focused on trying. She would still fly off the handle, but it was residual behaviors laying around that are the toughest to get past, you know what I mean? You see, when we created a sincere relationship outside of her home, it modeled how to have one in the first place. It modeled how to communicate with someone you care about. It modeled how to be angry, how to be nonviolent at the same time, something she did not know. It modeled celebration and praise, both unfamiliar territories to her as well. And it modeled how to care. Again, somewhat of a foreign concept. By her senior year, she was determined to earn a scholarship. And I used her as an example as to how not to quit, how to rise up against all challenges, and how to push through and past any obstacle when I spoke about her at graduation because of the scholarship she earned. I'll bet I suspended that kid 20 times in the first 2 years. Maybe 5 times total in the last 2. You see, when everyone tells the person who can suspend to suspend a kid, what happens after they come back to school and they do it again? Did the suspension work at all? Or did it just suspend the time until the next occurrence? With kids today, are we up against the need to find new solutions? No. Not at all, man. We're up against knowing that we have pre-existing discrepancies between how kids should act and how they do act today. The definition of said discrepancy revolves around the fact that the kids are presenting new behaviors, unidentified behaviors, and all the while erratic ones to boot. And since we don't know how to deal with this, let alone comprehend a solution to it, we go back to the only means of extreme disciplinary measure that existed, which was suspension. Get them out. This is no place for these kids. Well, guess what? For many, many reasons, in addition to the pandemic impact, these are kids today. It isn't just your school, and it's oddly enough, not your administration. Not all the time. Now, if you know that my example when working with my former student derived based on an observation and via process of elimination, I knew what didn't work, enabling a more transparent definition of what does. How does this apply to today's major complaints about students? Do you see a correlation between the locations of the incidents and the relationships that the teachers in those rooms have with those kids? How about the relationships that those students have with any teacher? How about this? Does any of them work? Are any of them sincere? Perhaps there's a crack in the wall that surrounds that student, and that will be all you need to tear down the rest like I did. Do you have that extra gear? Can you wipe the slate clean and offer a fresh start when it's not deserved? Can you see it within yourself to intervene and try something else instead of the usual suspension? I said earlier in the episode that when kids get kicked out and sent back, it sends a message to the teacher that nothing was tended to and therefore not important. What teachers should also note is that it's a lack of communication efforts on the part of the administration that spoke with and worked with that kid while they were out of your room. They should inform that teacher, who is together as a team with that leader. This is something that can be done to improve the future of these students. I mean, perhaps they called home and found out that someone died. Perhaps they called home and were cursed at, and the kid cried, saw the counselor, then went back to class. Perhaps they were issued lunch detention and would talk with the principal or AP then. Maybe nothing was done because they already had detention, and it'll just add more time. This only takes a few seconds to happen, really, when you think about it. All of those circumstances do. The problem is rarely solved completely before a kid goes back to class as well. The main office is not a magical place that solves the problems that the teachers can't. But that's what you're also saying when you accuse administration of not doing anything about the kids you kick out. I can't deal with them, nor do I want to. So you should, and you don't either. This message couldn't be further from the truth on either side. Yet often spoken and shared aloud on campus and in break rooms nonetheless. Learn to make a relationship with those that you have the worst ones with, and watch how everything else changes for the better. Will this change in heart be enough to solve all the problems with kids that your school is having? No, not right away. It took me 2.5 years to find successes with my student in this story, but it was totally worth it. Each kid is a different process for your school to engage with. Each kid is a product of their own environment. Each kid is going to require a new method that will lead to successes. And yes, some kids kick and bite and punch and stab and destroy, and they do this in front of their other kids that don't. And not every educator out there, not very many actually, let me say that, not very many educators out there, from principals to teachers, know what to do and how to handle this when it happens. So instead of complaining, let's unite to find a way to create a relationship with each one of these kids. Let's communicate better. Let's not point blame and argue points that make us look bad and get nowhere fast. And let's determine what effective consequence looks like, because it positively influences future outcomes, not prevents futures, period. Talk about your hot button episode, you guys. There's some haymakers that I made in this. I want to hear your feedback. joe@travelprincipal.com or @travelprincipal everywhere else online. This isn't an easy pill to swallow, so let me help you learn to digest this on a more granular level. My name is Joe Clausey, and I'm your traveling principal, signing off saying, I suspend tons of kids forever. I still do, actually. But I know what it's used for and how to use it. I don't jump right to it, let alone suspend a kid 20 times without seeing any result and think that that's effective. Consequence is to lead to learned behaviors. And when they don't, they cease to be consequential anymore. So think it through.